Support for KNKX Studio Sessions come from Portage Bay Cafe, with reservations now available online for all four Seattle locations. Offering local, sustainable, and organic foods grown in the Northwest, Portage Bay Cafe is open for breakfast, lunch, and lunch delivery. Online at portagebaycafe.com.
We're so pleased to have Paula Cole with us. And you were here earlier this year and also promoting Ballads, which is your latest release. And we're just glad you came back and was so gracious enough to come by or on the early end here and do a couple tunes for us and talk with us, which we appreciate. And with you is bassist Ross Gallagher and guitarist Chris Bruce. So welcome, everyone. Paula, would you like to start us off with a song? Would that be okay?
Sure. Let me grab my microphone out of the stand and I'll just sing this one. I won't play. Chris Bruce and Ross Gallagher will play with me. This is a beautiful song that has been lasting through the decades, written by one of America's greatest jazz singers. That's how we usually regard her, but I also like to think of her as one of our great songwriters. And this song came as a result of a conversation she had with her mother, probably in the late 1930s, and it was first recorded by her in 1941. This is by Billie Holiday, and it's called God Bless the Child.
Oh, and spend an end. They don't come no more. Go ahead and help yourself, but don't take too much.
Grammy Award winner Paula Cole there, right, on KNKX. We're live on Facebook. I'm Paige Hansen. Just a pleasure to have you here. Paula Cole, your latest project called Ballads, which is how you approached the mix of jazz and Americana tunes that you've covered, Billie Holiday to Bobby Gentry, Nina Simone to Nancy Wilson. How did you choose from such a diverse universe of jazz and folk?
Wonderful question, and very difficult to choose, especially because I was so pent up. As I began as a jazz singer in my teenage years and studied with jazz teachers, and I fancied myself a wannabe female Chet Baker, you know. So I wanted to improvise and be a jazz singer, and I even was offered two jazz recording deals throughout the course of my career, but they just weren't right, and the timing wasn't right, and I think I needed to sing my own truths. A lot of the lyrics were not working for me. They weren't inclusive to women, a lot of them, and didn't speak to my heart and soul. But over the years, and learning songs out of the real book, learning songs from my father, for whom Ballads is dedicated, he was a professional musician, and he had to leave it to feed the family. So I'm living through his hopes and dreams a little bit, like Carl Jung says, like that's our primary guiding force, right? The unfinished hopes and dreams of our parents. And for sure, I'm doing that for both of my parents, for my father and in the music, and my mom, just as a woman, having some success in the world, because there were other women before me in the family with great talent who weren't allowed to have a voice in the world. My great-grandmother, Charlotte, was a wonderful pianist who was offered to tour with an orchestra and couldn't do it. And the family thought that shameful, you know, to tour around the world with a bunch of scary men. Oh, I say that because they're like my best friends and my family, and they're gentlemen. So here I am, and I relate to Joni Mitchell. I'm going on a big tangent, but that's one of her primary reasons for giving up her daughter for adoption and choosing the road to music. I'm doing it not just for myself, but because I must, because I do it for women behind me and my family and for all people. I have this thing that I need to share. I chose 20 songs out of the 31 songs that we recorded in 5 days. And that shows you how pent up I was, right? And I could have easily made that 40. And I chose songs that honored the masters that spoke to me, like John Coltrane, who went on a great spiritual pursuit of his later music, a gentle soul, a searcher, a truth seeker, like Billie Holiday, like Nina Simone, like Bobby Gentry, to whom I relate, who also won Best New Artist Grammy and then disappeared because she hated the music business, you know? So and self-produced at a time that was radical for women to do in country music. And here she is classified as country and southern, but really, if you know, and when I sing Ode to Billie Joe, it feels like a blues to me with a flat 7 chord in there. And it felt perfectly apt to put it alongside John Coltrane. Or to me, I wanted to blend genre. I wanted to rid of labels. I wanted to unify music.
because that's what my dad did for me in the living room.
Thank you so much. Paula Cole here in our studio session at 88.5 KNKX. I'll let you get set up there, ready for what's coming next. She's going to play the piano now, so it's nice to have a break and take a sip of tea.
So, this is a wonderful song written by a great piano player, Dr. Billy Taylor. But it was made known more by Nina Simone, and it's just a wonderful song for these times today. It's still so relevant. I find I'm choosing a lot of songs from the 30s and the 60s, turbulent times in America. And it's called I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free.
Well, standing ovation for a studio session. That's a good thing. We've got Grammy Award winner Paula Cole with us today here at 88.5 KNKX. I'm Paige Hansen. I want to mention also with Paula, who's playing piano as well as singing, we have on guitar Chris Bruce and on bass Ross Gallagher. Paula, you've been in this industry for over 25 years, starting as a jazz artist and going on to work with giants in pop and rock. And I'm wondering how the music industry has changed for you throughout those decades, either personally or just generally speaking.
I have opinions on that, and that's been a very subjective ride. I started as a well-educated jazz musician. I went to Berklee College of Music, and I studied music intensely and kind of worshipped at the legacy of mostly jazz. And so I took it very seriously and began writing my own songs at the end of college because I wasn't... I declined the jazz deal, and... I suppose this is a very tangential and long circuitous answer to your question, but just to give you an understanding of my road, I decided to start writing my own music, and that was profound because it was like a therapeutic process, and it's always been difficult to describe my music. Some people thought it was jazzy, and again, like a jazz label wanted to release my original music because they thought it was so jazz. But I knew it included more genres than that, and really I am this mongrel. I'm this melting pot of many musics, as we all are and should be. I think that's healthy. And I ended up signing to a label that was more niche boutique, allowing me to be me with all that I am. And while it was in the coffers, not yet released but completed, Peter Gabriel heard it and invited me to join him on a Secret World Live tour, which was a worldwide tour. And I was a big fan because he's another musician who worships music, worships the legacy of music, tries to be inventorly therapeutic with the lyrics, and allows many influences. West African music is profoundly influential to his process. And I adored his music, so I said big fat yes, and I flew to Germany, and I was thrown out in front of 16,000 Germans after one rehearsal with my idol. It was moving very quickly, and I would, you know, be on world stages with Peter, and I'd come back to the States, and I'd perform in coffee houses for three people, you know, driving around the States just kind of doing this, doing what I'm doing right now, which is hopefully making a quilt of sorts, a community, and touching hearts, and as well as my own. I needed my own healing, and the music, let's face it, it's a healer, and there's something mysterious about it. So I always try to look at music that way and not get too caught up in the music business, which is corrupt and changing and constantly shedding its skins. So, of course, my first incarnation was kind of pre-internet, let's face it, and pre-digital, and a lot of mom-and-pop radio stations. This was before the Telecommunications Act of 1997 that Clinton signed, which started allowing the monopolization. And therefore, what that meant for us artists was that playlists were being dictated by one or two people at the top. And it would get homogenized. What all of America is listening to gets increasingly homogenized and narrowed to single playlists. So there'd be a mix station in Dallas, Boston, you know, San Francisco, all playing the same. I'm just giving examples, but there'd be a Kiss station and a mix station and a this and a that, and they get consolidated and there's less free choice. I mean, especially for those of you who are a generation above me, know and remember even better times when DJs would play a Janis Joplin tune and then a Miles Davis tune, right? And really mix it. So I got a brief taste of that world, the analog world. And on my second album, that went to quick fame. It was a little traumatic for me, honestly, because I'm an introvert and a serious musician. And suddenly it was kind of about MTV. And, like, you know, that was really weird and ill-fitting for me. I did one more album, which was more social political justice oriented. And it was really a neo-soul album. which got mixed reviews and I think was really misunderstood. And then I had my daughter, and I took 7 years off. And in that 7 years, then began the internet and American Idol and these singer shows and things. And that was very different. And, of course, like the deconstruction of artists' income. I find myself on the other side. I was with Decca for a couple of albums, figuring it out. And then I thought, you know, enough. I just want to be independent. I can produce myself. I can make the music. So since I've been independent, I've embraced the technology, the approaching fans directly through social media. I've embraced digital and being leaner. And I feel freer. I'm more prolific. I can release an album every year or 2 years now. I have a smaller career because I in that time, it kind of sloughed off the fair weather fans, I think. And now I hope to be understood. That's what I hope. I don't feel like I've been understood or properly appreciated in a way. You know, even some of my hit songs, there's a lot of nuance to them in the lyrics that I don't think were understood. So here I am, still doing this, like a jazz musician, still touring the small clubs and theaters, because I'm dedicated to the music, and it's a healing process for me. So the business, it doesn't matter. What matters is this, right? It's the heart of it, the
Thank
healing
so
of it.
Thank you so much. You expressed yourself so well. It was a strong time for female artists in the musical industry, and you were in the mix at Lilith Fair, and I can tell you how much that particular movement influenced me, and I think many of my generation and even others. And did that influence your musical journey, being part of that crew of largely women writing and performing?
I think in hindsight, I'm struck by it. In the moment, it was just happening. And we were very present on the charts. There were a lot of women writing interesting songs, and it just felt natural. And I was touring with Sarah McLachlan in 95, opening for her Fumbling Towards Ecstasy tour. And every night I would thank her from the stage during my opening act just to say, thank you for supporting a female. Because normally the norms were, don't have a female open for a female. Don't play a female after another female on radio. That was actually the rules. So therefore, you get a lot of men, and we had less opportunities. So I would thank her for supporting me in having me on her tour. And I think she started realizing this was a good thing. And with the support of her team around her, she had some early Lilith test runs. I was always a part of that. I was a part of the whole gestation of it. And it was just good music. And honestly, it was some of my favorite audiences ever because it was loving. And all the men there were like in celebration of women too. Like they were good men. It felt like probably what original Woodstock felt like. Because I was at the 25th anniversary of Woodstock, and that was good too with Peter. But the Lilith Fairs were some of the best concerts I've taken part in because the people were kind and good and we wanted a better world. That's what it felt to me.
Thank you so much. Paula Cole here, KNKX. It's a studio session. And one more song I think the crew is going to have for us.
So this is a Bob Dylan song from his The Times They Are Changing album. Just a little bit redone. So I'm adding some more jazz, I suppose, aspects to the song. And I'm telling the story in a slightly slowed down version because it's an important story for today. It's still meaningful today. This is called The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll. And to me, in my mind, it's so much a relevant Black Lives Matter song today. And I hope you can hear the lyric. We'll play softly without my soft pedal. This is The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll. One, two, three, four, five, six. Sansinger killed poor Hattie Carroll with a cane that he twirled round his diamond ring finger at a Baltimore hotel society gathering. And the cops, they were called in, and his weapon took from him as they rode him in custody down to the station and booked Williams and Zinger for first-degree murder. But you, who philosophize disgrace and criticize all fears, take the rag away from your face, for now ain't the time for your tears. Singer, who at 24 years owns a tobacco farm of 600 acres with rich, wealthy parents who provide and protect him, and high office relations in the politics of Maryland reacted to his deed with a shrug of his shoulders and swear words and sneering, and his tongue, it was snarling, and in a matter of minutes on bail was out walking. But you, who philosophize disgrace and criticize all fears, from your face, for now is the time for your tears. Hattie Carroll was a maid in the kitchen. She was 51 years old and gave birth to 10 children who never sat once at the head of the table, who didn't even talk to the people at the table, who just cleaned up all the food from the table and emptied the ashtrays on a whole other level. God, judge pounded his gavel to show that all's equal, and that the courts are on the level, and that the strings in the books ain't pulled and persuaded, and that even the nobles get properly handled once that the cops have chased after and caught 'em. and that the ladder of law has no top and no bottom, just stared at the person who killed for no reason, who just happened to be feeling that way without warning. And he spoke through his cloak, most deep and distinguished, and handed out strongly for penalty and repentance, Williams and Zinger with a 6-month sentence. But you philosophize disgrace.